As we near the end of 2022, we look back on some of the key storylines that drove the news and certainly drove your wallet and your spending, your 401k's performance, and more. This is Rich Jones in a special hour of Jacksonville's Morning News Now with WOKV consumer warrior Clark Howard, diving deep into some of the key storylines from the economy in Northeast Florida and the rest of the country and what to look for in 2023. My friend and colleague at Cox Media Group, Skylar Cooper, sat down with Clark for this year-end special.
All right, Clark, we had to connect before the year was up and look at some of the biggest things that happened in 2022 and what some of the big things will be in 2023 in your mind. So let's look back at the biggest financial changes to our lives in 2022. We've talked about inflation a lot. Gas prices were up. They're back down now, thankfully. Interest rates were a big conversation. In fact, just recently, the Fed raised the rate again, but lower than they had done before. What do you think the biggest impacts were in 2022?
Well, inflation is the dominant story, and particularly you mentioned it because of the Russian invasion of Ukraine. Gasoline prices went berserk. Diesel prices went even more crazy, and that is so disruptive to people's confidence. It's so disruptive to people's budgets. And then in the midst of that, we had inflation that was going to happen because of some big mistakes that the Congress and the Federal Reserve made in 20 and 21, where they both pumped too much money into the economy. And the result was the terrible inflation we saw earlier in 22. And it also led to the intense job market. In your lifetime, I know you have never seen, Skylar, a job market like this that was so intensely strong. And I would talk to people who hire workers that of every 10 people they had offered jobs to, the first day they might have one or two show up and none of the other eight or nine would even call and say they weren't coming. I mean, that's how out of balance the job market became because the economy was flat out overheated. So all of these things of being out of balance, the Federal Reserve raising interest rates and the Congress in 22 showing great restraint with spending has led to the economy slowing, inflation slowing down, and it sets the table for a more stable 23 barring an unexpected event in the world. Lower inflation for sure. And oil prices, who knows? Anybody involved in the energy industry in Oklahoma can tell you, you can guess based on what's going on which way energy is going to go in 23. But it's only a guess because you never know what external factors will occur.
I think back to the last couple of years and how the things like the housing market were so different when COVID hit. The rates were so low. People could really get a great refi rate or they could buy a house. And then it kind of sped back up and went crazy, right? Where it was like you good luck. If you put an offer in, you're probably going to lose. My sister went through that when she was trying to buy a house. I'm hearing from some real estate agents that that's kind of, it's back to a point now we haven't seen in a while, but in a good way because it's kind of more normal.
Exactly. What was going on with the housing market was a complete distortion because, again, the Federal Reserve and the Congress, with good intentions, particularly in 20, were trying to stave off a depression. Because when suddenly we were in those lockdowns and tens of millions of people were instantly unemployed and all that, the whole goal was to keep us from going into a 1930s situation again. And they overdid it. And those mortgage rates went way too low, and it fed this frenzy in the housing market. And now we not only are getting back to a normal housing market, but we also are at a much higher price point. We've got a lot of people who'd like to buy a home. And even though the sellers now are saying, hey, yeah, we got this for you and that for you and the other for you, it's at a purchase price that is not affordable for most first-time home buyers. So it's going to take a while for the housing market to get back to a true normal market, And it will over time. And the way that's going to happen, Skylar, is home prices are going to just kind of sit there for a while. And over the years, as the size of the nation's economy grows and people's paychecks will grow over the years, the housing prices will end up, people's incomes will end up making those housing prices affordable that aren't at this moment.
We also saw a lot of disruption, not just this year, but primarily earlier in the automotive industry. And I noticed just driving around town that there are more cars and trucks on those lots again than we saw before. I actually saw, it kind of made me laugh, but it made good sense. There's a car dealer by my house that was able to take the opportunity of having not that many cars on the lot to repave their lot. So I'm like, hey, we don't have anything to move. Let's fix the lot. It seems like that's getting better too.
Yeah, and it's going to be a gradual story through 23. So you got a couple things going on. The used vehicle market went through many, many distortions because of COVID. The new vehicle market fed into that with the factory shutdowns, the supply chain disruptions with the chips that seems to have healed in a lot of ways. There's still spot shortages of parts that are needed in final assembly of vehicles. But that's healing at the same time with rising interest rates on vehicle loans. People are having an affordability problem with vehicles. So the car market is healing both new and used. And it's not going to be like a light switch. You're seeing gradual improvement as a consumer. But there will be not like a moment that all of a sudden the prices that were so inflated on used vehicles and the dealers marking up above manufacturer suggested retail on new vehicles will just all end at one moment. No, it's going to be a gradual process that the second half of 23 will be so much more customer friendly than it is as we talk today. I can't even begin to tell you.
Let's look into Clark Howard's crystal ball a little bit for 23. You've already talked about some of the things you expect to change. So inflation up, down, energy prices, is 23 going to be different than 22 was?
So 23, we'll see shocks with inflation where they'll think it's beaten and defeated, and then we'll have a bad inflation report here or there. But the trend is our friend now. The fever of inflation is broken. And it will be a steady process of prices going more normalized. But we're a good ways from where we've been in recent years with an inflation rate of about 2% a year. And the reason is, even though employers are not going to be as hot to hire workers as the economy slows in 23, there's still an imbalance. We have a shortage of workers, and we have not been able to reach a political agreement in Washington what to do about those worker shortages. We have an extreme shortage of younger people in the United States and an aging population, and we have gotten nowhere on having a legal worker program. And so we're in this terrible political environment right now about we've got these people coming illegally across the border. That's infuriating citizens. And we have no structure or procedure to have any kind of legal way for people to fill jobs that are going unfilled right now in the United States. So it's going to continue to have wage pressure, which is great for those of us that are here. But for overall economic growth, it does harm affordability in the United States for things, and it harms economic growth. With just having stepped into a political quagmire there, if somebody's really mad at me, they can just go to clark.com/clarkstinks and post how mad I just made them, even uttering the word immigration.
Well, allow me to add fuel to that flame, which is, did we ever get to the point of recession? I heard a lot of people saying yes, and then there were others saying no, but we were close.
No, we haven't had a recession yet. We've had some sectors of the economy are in a recession. There's always what's called a rotation, and there are parts of the economy that may be doing great and other parts that aren't doing well at all. And that one category may be in its own recession. But the overall economy, no, we've not been in a recession. And we could well be in one in 23. But so far, the tea leaves are looking like it's going to be a very mild recession by historical measures, if we have one at all. We could have something that some economists coin what's known as a growth recession, which means we grow so slowly for a while that it feels like a recession, even though it's not.
Our 2022 year-end special with consumer warrior Clark Howard continues. Here's more of our conversation with Skylar Cooper.
All right, Clark, let's talk about another one that's kind of been hot in the news lately, which is cryptocurrency. You and I have talked about this before, and I remember your big key piece of advice was kind of like you'd say with any investment, you know, don't put anything in it that you're not willing or can't afford to lose. So where are we now with crypto after this whole FTX thing?
Well, the reality is crypto was never an investment. It was a speculative holding, because if crypto was real, it would have a value that was predictable and stable, kind of like money issued by the government. But the frenzy about crypto was about all the hype that people were going to buy the latest, greatest crypto, whatever it was called, and it was suddenly going to make them a gazillionaire. Well, nobody was trying to be a gazillionaire in whatever crypto it was. They were hoping that crypto would run up in a value equivalent to dollars, and then they'd cash out and they'd have all these dollars, which was really funny, because if crypto was all about not having faith in dollars and euros and pounds and yen, why was everybody trying, as soon as the value ran up, to convert it back into dollars or any other currency? And it's because it was all a hype machine. Crypto has a valid role to play in our lives as part of a much bigger thing called blockchain, which is a way of being able to move money from one person to another, one company to another, or one country to another, without all the expenses and inefficiencies that have historically been part of doing that. But crypto as a get-rich-quick scheme was only going to end in a trail of tears, where it's ended up right now.
I know a lot of people who they jump right on. They think this is the next greatest thing. They're going to put money in it. It may not be a get rich for them, but they may think it's happening right now. It's red hot. This is the way. I think it's moving a little slower than they anticipated as far as getting into your everyday life.
Well, it's because, okay, so here's the problem. So crypto was what I call a story, that people like a shortcut. And you tell somebody, you know, like you've heard me, now I want you to boost, Skylar, how much you're putting of your pay into your 401k every month. And you got to pick up all that company match. And then got to have that money well diversified in there. And then, you know, in 30 years, it's going to be a huge amount of money. Well, you tell a lot of people that they got to do this basic blocking and tackling, and 30 years from now, they'll have financial comfort. A lot of people are like, hey, that's not my thing. I want to make real money, and I want to make it right now. And that makes them susceptible to whatever the latest mania is. And so the whole crypto dare to be rich thing was a mania that inflated and then deflated even quicker than it inflated, and with great consequences to people who got in the game late.
There was something else in the news recently, and it was just a little reminder from Uncle Sam that they're there and they're watching. And I know how you feel about Zelle and Venmo, those kind of apps. The IRS came out recently and said, hey, look, we're going to start looking at some of those P2P transactions, person-to-person transactions within a certain dollar amount, because, I mean, I've even wondered that too. Are we supposed to be paying taxes on money going back and forth? It's really already been paid, but that's not how they see it always.
So, all right, so there's been a lot of confusion about this, and I don't know how the IRS is ever going to administer this, but here's the issue. Nobody cares about you and I going to dinner, I pay and you want to reimburse me for your part. I paid on my credit card and you want to Venmo me or Cash App me money for your share. Nobody cares about that. The IRS doesn't care. Nobody cares. The issue is a lot of people are doing business, receiving payments with Cash App, Venmo, PayPal, or Big Bad Zelle. And so if they're using any of those for business, a lot of people just forget that if you're making a profit on a business, you have to report that and you have to pay tax on it. So what this is about with PayPal, Cash App, Venmo, and Zelle is to be able to say to you, okay, so you were you used and received $18,000 last year receiving payments through Cash App. What was this for? And if it was for providing a service or a product or whatever, net of whatever expenses you had, you owe income tax on that. So this is about people that were evading taxes by getting paid through the app. So all this means, Skyler, there have always been people who did work under the table. It means people are going to want to be paid in cash. Then they're not going to run afoul of the reporting where they have to justify that the money they've received was non-taxable.
What if somebody's just sending like a, they live with someone and that's how they pay their rent?
Nobody cares.
That's good for people to know. I didn't want anyone to get too worried about it all.
Our year-end conversation with consumer warrior Clark Howard continues on 104.5 FM. I'm Rich Jones. My Cox Media Group colleague Skyler Cooper recently sat down with Clark, and they talked about electric vehicles, the affordability of electric vehicles in 2023 and beyond.
It's like if you think of an electric car as more like a technology piece where they do an alpha and then they do a beta, and their customers suffer through the alpha and beta, and then they get it right. And so that seems to be the exact trend line with the electric vehicles. And now, one by one, the manufacturers have gotten the price points better and better. They've got the technology better and better, the reliability and the range. And the big thing is how fun they are to drive. I mean, it's nuts, because an electric vehicle is not an appliance. An electric vehicle is fun. In fact, too much fun, because they're so powerful, they're so fast. And think about how the F-150 Lightning can power your house for 3 days if there's a power outage.
That's impressive. And I love the way it looks. I'm an outdoorsman, so I like the way they have shown that you can go camping and whatever you got to power, just use the truck.
Yeah, and Rivian, I don't know if you've heard of Rivian.
Yeah, we've seen a few in town, actually. It's interesting.
Yeah, so Rivian is not a work truck. Rivian is really for recreation. And the Rivian pickup truck even has a kitchen built into it. And you slide this kitchen out, and you've got a wonderful thing for tailgating or for camping or whatever. You've got like a gourmet kitchen that slides out of the truck, and it's amazing. And you don't have to worry about flashlights because you got full power for lighting the whole time you're camping. And so there's so many possibilities that come with the electric vehicles. But the big thing, Skyler, is how much cheaper they're going to be to run than a gas engine. The most recent analysis I found of 22 countries that have a decent amount of electric vehicles is now in 19 of them, it's cheaper already to own an electric vehicle than a gas engine. The United States, we're not going to get there till probably maybe 24. Probably next year is when they'll be at parity or cheaper. But by 25 or 26, owning an electric vehicle, because the cost of ownership, overall cost of ownership, what's known as TCO, total cost of ownership, will be maybe 20% less for an electric vehicle than an equivalent gas engine one. But even at that point where they're much cheaper to own and operate,
it won't necessarily be the right choice for a lot of people, because if you do heavy rural driving, you're not going on major routes, charging them is going to be a bear of a problem.
Right now, you at some point will run across a gas station. You may not run across a charging station at first. Yeah, that makes good sense.
You know Buc-ee's?
Oh, yeah.
In Texas?
Yeah.
So Buc-ee's is adding electric vehicle chargers as fast as they can build them.
Are they going to have 80 options like on the gas pumps?
Yes, they will.
Wow.
And you're joking, but I've seen it. I was at a Buc-ee's recently that had Tesla chargers, third-party chargers, and they were all full, and they had a long row of them. So over the next few years, we're going to steadily see the uptake of electric vehicles be a real business benefit to Quick Trip, to Buc-ee's, you name it, because the difference is I pull into a gas station and I go to fill up. I can just fill up in like 7 minutes and I'm gone. I don't have to go inside. But when I'm charging an electric vehicle, it takes typically 20 minutes to get a fast charge at a public charger, at a good public charger. So if I'm at Quick Trip or I'm at Buc-ee's or wherever I go and I'm there 20 minutes, I'm going to go inside and I'm going to shop. And this is going to be so fantastic for the convenience stores because now they got me captive for 20, 25 minutes where when I just pull in to buy gasoline, I can gas and go.
Now, in the case of Buc-ee's, I'm captive there for almost half an hour anyway because you got to look around and you got to buy all the food. I wish we'd get one of those up
now,
here.
Do you like the brisket sandwich? What do
you
like?
Yeah, I got one of those. I always check out the jerky and then the dessert bar. I hit it all. Oh, and the little roasted nuts with the cinnamon. Yeah, you got
to
get it.
So if you ever go to a Buc-ee's at breakfast time, their sausage, egg, and cheese biscuit is so good and must be so terrible for you. It must be 1,400 calories. It's so good.
What about electric cars in the bigger scheme of things? I know there was talk at one point about a truck, over the road, you know, like a semi. What about in infrastructure world in terms of transportation and goods?
Question. So think of trucking this way. We think of the 53-foot trailers. We think of them with the over-the-road drivers, and we think of them the long distance. It's going to be a good while. It could be 15 years before electric tractor trailer trucks are common for long distance routes. But most truck driving is local or regional. And the electric trucks are going to save companies that use them so much money, it's freaky. You know, Pepsi Cola, it has huge orders for big tractor trailer trucks that are all electric because they're going to make back the cost of the truck so fast it makes their head spin. And they're looking at them for daily routes of 500 miles or less is where the capability is today. And most truck travel is less than 500 miles a day. And then they charge overnight. And so this is going to be a game changer for big logistics companies, when they're able to reduce their transportation costs, the maintenance cost is lower. You don't have the engine overhauls. You don't have to do the oil changes. And you don't have the enormous cost for diesel fuel. And it's going to be something that today is like, yeah, right, that'll be the day. And then 5 years from now, you're going to just look at it as completely mundane and routine that regional truck delivery is exclusively an electric vehicle that's doing it.
Now, remember, I'm in an oil and gas state, and one of the knocks that I always hear on electric cars is, yeah, well, look at the plant that's powering the electricity. We had some big news recently about the future of energy in that big breakthrough with nuclear fusion, which sounds pretty exciting. Do you think that, in conjunction with electric cars, could really transform not only our country, but the world someday?
It's funny. I remember I was about 8 years old. So this is almost 60 years ago. And we were visiting family friends. And the father of the family, who is now, he's still alive. He's 100 years old. And he was going on and on about cold fusion and how it was going to change the whole world. And he was obsessed with it. Never stopped talking about cold fusion. He was a scientist. And, man, I'm so glad he lived long enough for a meaningful breakthrough. But in terms of commercial applicability, I don't know when that's going to happen.
This is a surprising statistic, and it's actually higher than I remembered. And I don't know if you've heard about this, but according to the state, right, from Oklahoma, 2021, here in the state, wind energy accounted for 41% of our total in-state electricity net generation, which is pretty big for an oil and gas state, don't you think?
Well, okay, so again, think of Oklahoma as an energy-producing state, not as an oil and gas state. You can't stay stuck in the past. You know, we as humans put blinders on and we always go with what's comfortable and what we've done. But you've always got to do what Wayne Gretzky, the hockey great, always said. He always thought about where the puck might be going instead of where it was. And that's the way we've got to think about our lives and with business. Oh, wait, here's one for you, Skylar. All right. 70% of the jobs that will exist in 20 years don't exist today.
Wow. That's an astounding number.
And in your lifetime, if somebody said web programmer or worked on the web, in your lifetime, you know exactly what that means. If you would have said that 40 years ago, somebody would have been amazed that somebody made their living working with spider webs, because that's what a web meant.
Funny how the times change. Just don't tell me that that flips and that 70% of today's jobs won't exist, because then I'm a little worried about me.
That really, but you'll do something. You will take the skills you have. You're a hardworking guy. You're a sharp guy. And if things just change completely and the way people hear the weather, or, you know, with tornadoes being so important, or the way they hear the news or whatever, works completely differently, you'll take your skills and you'll do whatever that is. I mean, that's what we do in life, is we never stop adapting.
As we wrap up our Jacksonville's Morning News special with consumer warrior Clark Howard, a really important three-step process that Clark wants to make sure you follow for financial freedom in the new year. Here's Skylar Cooper and Clark Howard.
So I wanted to get Clark's three big financial tips for 2023.
Number one, would not matter what the calendar year was. And that is, I need you living on less than what you make. I got to get you doing that. Because the only way you get financial security in life is when you live on less than what that paycheck is. So your goal in 23, if you've never been a saver, I've got a challenge for my listeners that we end 2023 with $2,023 saved. Even if you got zero on January 1st, I want you to develop a habit. And habits can be good or bad. The habit I want you to develop is living on less than what you make. And if you say, I can't do it, I mean, I just got all these obligations and all these expenses and my paycheck doesn't go far enough. Start in 23 with one penny of each dollar you make going into savings. And it can be a simple savings account with, I don't care where you do it, really. I just want you to start saving money. And then every 6 months, I want you to go up another cent on each dollar. If you do it 1 cent at a time, your lifestyle changes so gradually. But in 5 years' time, you're saving a dime of every dollar you make. I want that habit. And that's my challenge, far and away number one for 2023. Now, remember, I just said I don't care where you put the money. But that's my second challenge. I want you to open a Roth IRA. You can open a Roth IRA with as little as $1. And a Roth IRA is a tax-free account. You know, we talked earlier about government taxing us this way, that way, the other way, worried about a 1099 for Venmo or something. This is a case where the government says up front, we promise you, you put money in a Roth IRA and you will earn tax-free in retirement and you will spend tax-free in retirement. So the money goes in after tax, grows tax-free, and then way down the road, you spend it tax-free, and you're allowed to put up to $6,500 a year in a Roth IRA. So that's number two. Number three, I want you to think before you spend. You know, we have had a terrible time with inflation, particularly earlier in 22. A lot of people are wheezing financially. And so some of our spending is emotional spending. Some of it is impulse spending. And I want you just to think through. And if you know yourself and you have a lot of trouble controlling your impulses and buying things that you thought were a good idea, what I'd like you to do in 23 is I want you to buy only with cash. All you're walking around is done only with cash money. So every pay period, you make a deal with yourself. You're taking out so much cash to last you till the next pay period. And what I've discovered is that when people get closer to the next pay period and they see their money shrinking, things they would have done without thinking about it, they change their mind. They don't go buy that latte. They don't go get that sandwich. They fix one at home. Whatever it is, they learn to live a more frugal existence. And all three of those things, Skylar, you hear how they're all different ways of trying to get you to be more powerful with your wallet and not being afraid of an email of a bill you owe or a trip to the mailbox with a bill you owe. I want you to reduce the financial anxiety in your life and take more control of your life.
Those are fantastic. Clark's three big financial tips for 2023. I love that last one because it kind of takes the willpower out of it and it becomes really a necessity in that you can't afford that expensive coffee because you've got $30 left. You got to get through the day or whatever the number is. How do you suppose people should come up with that dollar figure, what to give themselves?
So I'll tell you, I used to have a TV show where I would meet with couples that were in great financial distress and we'd see their situation, see their lives. And I had a eureka moment when I did that show that was called Get Clark Smart. And we would put people on an allowance, but we'd let them set the allowance for themselves. And it would turn out to be much less than they were spending. And not everybody, but most of the time, people manage to live within that amount. And I dial you back to 2020. People's spending fell off a cliff. When we were dealing with lockdowns and all that, in whether they were government imposed or just people chose to stay in their own home and not go out a lot, people's spending fell to nothing. People were shocked. And so when people give themselves their own permission, what their spending should be between pay periods, they will stay within what they've decided on. And usually it's a great, great deal less than we spend if we just have that plastic in our wallet or we use Apple Pay or whatever. It's a phenomenon that is just true with real cash that's finite and you see it and you hold it, that people change what they spend.
Clark, I want to thank you so much for joining us for this year-end show, the Clark Howard Consumer Warrior Hour. As we wrap up here, I want to just open the floor to you. We'll call it Clark's Choice. What is your final thought for us as we look ahead into 2023?
Life is not about money. Life is about family, friends. And I put out a plea recently because there was a story about how lonely so many people get and get down during the Christmas, New Year's holiday period. And my plea to you is reach out to family. Like, you live in Tulsa, maybe you got a brother who lives in, you know, I don't know, in Florida or wherever, or Texas, and you kind of lost touch with that brother. You got an old friend from high school or whatever that you really enjoyed being with and you lost track of them. Track them down. Call them. Text them. Let them know you want to see how they're doing. You want to say hello. Not only will it bring joy into your life, but it may renew a connection, and it will definitely bring joy in the life of the person you reach out to.